Chris Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at Midas.com.
Ton of places to go with our NHL insider, Chris Johnston from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Let's start in Washington, my friend. 5 years, $46 million on a contract extension for Nicklas Backstrom. Your thoughts on five more years for Backstrom in Washington?
Well, I think he did a pretty nice job for himself, considering that, you know, he was negotiating on his own behalf with the team. And you know, obviously that's something players can really only do in certain circumstances. I think, you know, especially with the case where it's someone who spent his entire career in one place, has a great relationship with ownership and management, and doesn't want to go anywhere else, doesn't want to test the market or play that game. And so in that light, in that context, you know, I think Nick Backstrom did well for himself. It's age 33 to 38 season. So, there's a bit of risk there for the team, although we've certainly seen lots of players, Joe Thornton comes to mind, that play a game like Nicklas Backstrom and still maintain a pretty high standard into their mid to late 30s. So, you know, I think it was a fair outcome. And you know, this was a circumstance where the player had no interest in testing the market. So under that kind of, you know, against that backdrop, I think he did well.
And as you say, like from a cap standpoint, you got to be pretty happy to get a key player like that and only have a 5-year commitment to it. Like we're seeing 29, 30 year old signing 7-8 year deals right now. 5 years, the Caps have got to be elated with this deal.
Well, for sure. And you know, they've still taken on some risk in it. I mean, there's a chance that there's a drop off and there's a chance for injury, of course. You know, that's present in every contract, but as players get older, both those things become more likely, you know, coming into play. And, you know, I think in this case, because they've just had Nicklas Backstrom on a $6.7 million AAV for 10 years, you know, he's played well above that for a long time. You know, they were probably comfortable giving him that raise and with the fact that they could keep it to a 5-year term, you know, is a bonus for them. And I think probably most important for all is that it's done now. There's no question about it. It's not hanging over the rest of the season. There's no sort of outside discussion about what will become of him and his future, and, you know, allows everybody there to focus on the task at hand, which is trying to win another Stanley Cup.
What does this mean for Braden Holtby, the other rather outstanding UFA that the Capitals have?
Well, it's still to be determined. You know, I don't think that it doesn't seal his fate one way or the other. You know, I still believe that there's a set of circumstances where, you know, Braden Holtby could be signed, you know, at some point after the season. And you know, at this stage, the Capitals and Braden Holtby's representatives have, you know, decided just to have no discussions during the year. That you know, they'll see where, take stock and see where everything's at when the season does come to an end. But, you know, that probably the bigger picture is what, you know, Braden Holtby wants. I mean, he's seeing a young goaltender in Ilya Samsonov come on and you know, he's starting to take some of his starts. You know, had his first career NHL shutout last night in the game against Carolina. And you know, is showing at least the signs, especially given his age, that, you know, he's likely to take over that number one job, perhaps even before the end of this year, if not a little bit later than that. And so, you know, if the priority for Holtby is similar to Backstrom and that he's willing to kind of do anything he can to stay in Washington, that he's willing to take less money, which is probably going to be important because the Capitals do have a fair number of long-term, big money commitments already on their books. You know, I think that there's a circumstance where he could stay there, but, you know, it may be his desire when the time comes to, you know, try to be a number one somewhere else, to hit the open market and you know, see what his value is to other teams and you know, maybe to go elsewhere. So, you know, I don't know that it tells us anything one way or the other definitively. I think, you know, he is in a similar spot, though, you know, if we had talked about this a week or 2 months ago, and that, you know, I think this is likely his last season there, but it's not guaranteed to be the last season, depending on where Braden Holtby's mind's at this offseason.
Chris, staying in Washington, and they take a 2-0 win over Carolina last night, and both goals coming off the stick of Alex Ovechkin. He moves into tenth, sole possession of 11th spot, rather, on the all-time goal-scoring list with 685 and then 686. He's four back of 10th, which is held down by Mario Lemieux at 690, and he's now within 200 goals of Wayne Gretzky's 894, the most all-time. I don't know if he's going to get there, but just the fact a guy in his early 30s could be within 200 goals of Wayne Gretzky's all-time record, it is pretty hard to wrap your head around, and I think it just underlines how incredible a career we're talking about with Washington's Ovechkin.
Yeah, I think the fact that he's continued to score in the 50-goal range this deep into his 30s, that's where the surprise comes in for me. I mean, obviously, he was immediately the best goal scorer or among the best goal scorers in the league when he got there. But, you know, he's been so durable in his career. I think Ovi's missed somewhere between 30 and 40 games during his entire career, which is crazy when you think he's, you know, 15 seasons in at this point. And he's just been so consistent as a scorer. And it's remarkable that he'll get even into the top 10 at this point with potentially still runway left. I mean, I think those were his 27th and 28th goals of the year last night. Yep. So 50 is not out of the question. Again, this year, certainly somewhere in the 40 range looks like a foregone conclusion, you know, provided he's healthy the rest of the season. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does with his contract because, you know, he's only got the rest of this year and next year on his deal. You know, he's been a little bit noncommittal when asked about this in terms of how he views his own future playing out. You know, he's got unique circumstances and that, you know, there's always the chance for him to go back to Russia, of course, and play in the KHL. And, you know, I'm sure that there's some pull there for him to do that before his time is said and done. But, you know, I would think that the Capitals will put a pretty big push on this summer after July 1st when they're able to sign him to an extension to get him to stick around a little bit longer and see if he can keep chasing that record. I mean, I've kind of crunched the numbers, and to my mind, a lot still has to go right for him to break that record just because you're still talking about, you know, 540 goal seasons
yep.
beyond where he is today, which is, you know, it would seem to be within reach, but it requires him to be healthy. It requires him to keep playing at a high level right to the late 30s. You know, I think if anyone can do it, it's him. But first of all, I think he's got to decide if he wants to keep playing in the NHL beyond next season, which is something he's yet to do.
Chris Johnston is with us, our NHL insider from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays. 2 months without Morgan Rielly in Toronto, how big a deal, how much of a loss is this for the Maple Leafs?
It's a significant loss. I mean, you know, you couple it now with Jake Muzzin being out. You know, those are the Leafs' top two defensemen at this point in time. And, you know, it's probably a position where there was questions to be asked in general about, you know, how the Leafs were going to get by with their defensive core. You know, you take the top two off of any team and things start to look a little iffy. You know, from the Leafs' perspective, I guess one thing that's notable is they don't really have a ton of cap space to work with to try to find any kind of solution. And you know, I'm not talking about finding another top pairing guy simply because I just don't think that's a reasonable expectation. But even, you know, bringing in depth options is going to be a bit of a tricky proposition. And so, you know, the way it sets up here is they brought up their top prospect in the organization, Rasmus Sandin, who's, you know, still just 19 years old, but he's going to be thrust into a role here. And he's not replacing Morgan Rielly's minutes, but he's going to have to play some important minutes for this team. And I think depending on, you know, he'll have a large say in how well they weather this, just because if he plays well enough, you know, there's a chance they get through it. If he's maybe not ready for the load at this point in time, and I don't think anyone can know for sure just because of his age and relative inexperience, then this is going to be a little bit tougher. But, you know, this, other than losing Frederik Andersen, who's probably been the Leafs MVP this season, you know, that this is probably the next player you choose if you were Toronto in terms of who you wouldn't want to lose for a significant point in time. And, you know, Morgan is the team's ice time leader, plays all situations, and there's just no way to replace him while he's gone for at least 2 months.
Tell us a little bit more about Rasmus Sandin, who has a lot of buzz about him coming off of his World Junior performance for Sweden.
Well, you know, that's a big part of it. I mean, he was the star at the World Juniors, might have been the best player there. You know, some of that's due to age. He turns 20 in early March, so he was one of the older players that was playing at that tournament. But, you know, I think the advantage that he's had since being drafted in 2018 is unlike North Americans his age, he's been able to play in the AHL. And so, you know, he had a full season in the American Hockey League last year, you know, played six games of the Leafs at the start of this season, and then has been down there since. And so I think, you know, he's had a developmental advantage in getting experience, you know, playing against men, playing big minutes in the Leafs system, and being comfortable around their staff and everything. So, you know, it's not as though they're throwing a totally raw player into this moment. It's just that, you know, I don't know. You know, certainly if these injuries weren't happening, I don't think he'd be in the NHL today. There's no secret about that. You know, they would prefer probably to have him spend most of the rest of the season in the AHL, and then, you know, count on him to be a regular member of their top six next year. But
right,
you know, sometimes those plans, it could work in their favor. Maybe he's ahead of where everyone would expect at this point in time, and this works out well. You know, I think that it's sort of a wait and see type of experiment. But, you know, as I said, there's not a trade or anything that can ease the situation here much. So that the best outcome, or the easiest outcome from the Leafs' perspective, is if he's at least able to hold his own on the third pairing and you know, help get them through this point in time until at least Muzzin's ready. You know, when they'll at least have some options then.
On the subject of a trade, obviously salary cap is a factor in everything, but the Flames and Leafs were reportedly very close to a deal in the offseason. Now, part of that trade is in Colorado now, but is there any chance these two teams could double back and maybe make a hockey trade with both teams having at least a bit of salary cap considerations?
There may be a fit there. You know, I don't know if it's the most logical fit at this point in time, but you know, let's face it, Calgary, I think, would like to add to their forward group. If there's one area where the Leafs have abundance of players, both, you know, on their present roster, but even down in the AHL, they have a lot of forwards. I mean, if Toronto makes a trade that involves a player before the deadline, you know, I think I'd be surprised if it was anyone but a forward being moved out. And that, you know, it could be not necessarily a big name, but someone who's playing on their AHL team that's currently blocked because their NHL roster's pretty full at this point in time. And so I could see a potential fit there, but, you know, I almost feel as though, you know, at least in the Leafs perspective, that there's probably, you know, they're looking at teams like the New Jersey Devils, for example, that have Sammy Vatanen as an impending unrestricted free agent who I think will probably be moved before the deadline, or Brendan Dillon in San Jose. You know, I don't know where the Flames are at with their defensemen, but to me, the Leafs are either trading for a backup goalie or some defensive depth, you know, with the limited cap space they have left. And, you know, I'm not sure if the Flames can tick those boxes probably as well as some other teams out there can.
On the subject of the Flames, we had quite the game out here on Saturday between the Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. We're a few days removed from it and still a lot of buzz about the Matthew Tkachuk, Zach Cassian situation. What did you make of that whole thing, and are you okay with the two-game ban for Cassian?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, because you can't have, you know, players assaulting other players, which is essentially what that was. And you know, I think that there's a fair conversation and debate around, you know, that the hits that Tkachuk threw and you know, how he, you know, might have provoked that situation a little bit. But, you know, if you remove that part of the conversation, I just think on its own, in a bubble, you can't have someone doing what Cassian did for any reason, even if something dirty had happened to him. And so I got no trouble with the suspension. I certainly have no complaint about the Battle of Alberta with emotion back into it, because, you know, I was lucky enough, I just was watching that game at home and was loving every minute of it. I've enjoyed the last couple of days, the quotes from yep, both sides with, you know, neither really stepping back. I mean, that's the beauty of it. I feel like hockey had a lot more of this in the past, and it's gone away from that. But, you know, here you've had a game that was emotional on the ice, and the emotions really haven't subsided even with a couple of days to think about it. And of course, we've got the teams playing again coming out of the All-Star break in the pretty near future here. So, you know, I got no problem with any of it, to be honest. I didn't think the Chuck's hits were that bad. It's a different era. You know, I think that's part of what the conversation or debate has boiled down to in my eyes is this idea of the self-policing in hockey. Well, we don't really have fighting anymore in the game. I mean, certainly not even as much as 5 years ago and 10 or 15 years ago. It's a different sport. And so, you know, I don't know that I understand why players who played for a lot of years and played in the past, you know, think Tkachuk had something to answer for there, but I just don't think the way the game is played now that's as relevant to the conversation. And, you know, I think he obviously did the right thing by poking the bear and you know, provoking a penalty that led to the winning goal. And it's going to be fascinating to see what we get to in that next game, because you know, this is true a rivalry as I can recall in past years. I mean, part of seeing the fighting go out of the sport is we've had less kind of antics and sideshow to games. And, you know, that's what's going on here, I think, between the Flames and Oilers.
What is the reputation of Matthew Tkachuk around the league? What are the conversations? Because we're right in the belly of the beast here. So we have our own opinion on Tkachuk, and Flames fans have their own opinion on him, seeing him play every single night. But what about outside of Calgary? What are opinions like on Tkachuk? How is he viewed by the rest of the league, or by other people that you speak to?
Well, at least those not in Edmonton today, I think, favorably, obviously. I mean, he's scored that goal in Nashville this year. I mean, even if you're not following the Flames closely, you've seen some of the skill plays that he can make. And you know, and watching him when he's at his best, it's clear that there's a bit of an agitating nature to what he does. He certainly doesn't shy away from throwing hits or getting involved in contact or even stirring the pot a little with you know, some of those comments, the back and forth he's had with Drew Doughty over the past few seasons. So, you know, I think that his reputation is sort of a modern day agitator, and one that can back it up by playing the game in the way you want to play too, and with skill. It's not all just grease and you know, those types of things. So, you know, I think he's a player that every team would want. I think his reputation is largely okay. I mean, obviously there's been a couple incidents here and there, but I certainly don't think he's got the label of being a dirty player or anything like that. And you know, I'm sure a few people will come out of this thinking, you know, he should have fought there or something, you know, the old school mentality. But the truth is that, you know, that the amount of people think that way are getting less and less with time. And so I think he's got a good reputation. He's a fun player. And I'd love to see him be part of a Canada-US game best on best at some point in the future.
Obviously, we were pretty big fans of that game. The fans at the Dome enjoyed that game. Do you think the NHL enjoys those types of games, or would they rather have them phased out as well?
I think deep down they do. You know, there's always it's a dangerous road, and obviously when it comes to things like concussions and some sensitivity to the safety of the sport, you know, I don't know how much the league can condone it, but let's face it. I mean, the NHL sold some of this stuff in the past, and whether it was fighting directly or just the physicality, the competitiveness of the sport, I mean, it's part of what I think makes hockey great. So, you know, I have to believe at the core, the league recognizes, you know, how entertaining this can be. You know, and we have to remember this is still an entertainment entity at its core. This is, if people aren't interested, the sport ceases to be. So, you know, I do think that very few people, I mean, there's probably lots of debate and probably depends what jersey you're wearing, in the stands about, you know, how things should have gone differently on Saturday or what the refs could have done or who should have been suspended. But, you know, I think in the bigger picture, the game was full of emotion and was exciting and back and forth. You know, if you don't like that, you don't like hockey, I don't think, to some degree. That was just one of the better games I've seen all year, certainly in the small handful that I can pull out of the top of my head. So, you know, I think the NHL probably likes that, but I don't know how much they can say publicly about that stuff anymore.
Right. With Chris Johnston, our NHL insider, one more for you, and that's on the Pittsburgh Penguins, who will get Sidney Crosby back. They went 12 games above 500 without him in the lineup. They were 18-6-4 without Crosby. They've dealt with nothing but injuries all year long. Just a thought on the job that Mike Sullivan's done as coach of that team and how this group has been able to persevere and still sit fourth overall in the NHL.
Well, their season basically defies explanation. Like, I don't even know remotely how they've kept it going. Pretty much at any given time this year, they've had $30 million, give or take, on injured reserve. You know, they had a long stretch without Malkin early. They've been without Crosby now for 2 months, but it goes deeper than that. I mean, Jake Guentzel, their top scoring winger, is done for the season. They've played without Brian Dumoulin, who's probably their second or third best defenseman. They were out without Letang for a period, and despite all those things, I mean, they're winning at basically a 700 clip, you know, throughout all of those ups and downs. And, you know, to me, it'll be interesting to see what they do before the deadline, because when you have a team that's played that well without its stars and with Crosby being healthy now, you know, I think they have to be looked at as one of the contenders. And so, you know, there's a little extra heat on Jim Rutherford, their GM, who loves to be active to try and see, you know, what he can do. With Gensel being out, that they've actually got some cap space that they wouldn't have probably had too much, you know, had they had a fully healthy roster. But I think there's an opportunity to add there. And the fact that they've played so well, that guys like Brian Rust, you know, had 18 goals in 30 games, you know, they found ways to get enough scoring, and they've got some great goaltending from Tristan Jarry, who's come up and kind of stolen a few starts anyway from Matt Murray, their number one. So it's the story of a team, I guess, and to me, that they're a team that no one wants to play. And, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for not letting anything that could become an excuse become an excuse. And you know, it'll be interesting to see now what it looks like with Sidney Crosby, because I don't see them getting any worse.
Good stuff as always, CJ. We'll do it again on Thursday. Thank you for the time, pal.
All right, guys. Take care.
Chris Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at Midas.com.